What is up, you unperfect actors? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast. Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back with the first of two wildcard episodes for this month, and this time we're going to return to a popular episode that we haven't touched on in almost a year. Wow. Sonnet Exploder.
Yeah.
Where we will take, inspired by the hit podcast Song Exploder, we're going to take one sonnet and we are going to blow it up line by line. You should read along at home, and we're going to dig deep and see what we can discover about one of Shakespeare's 154.
That's right. And these episodes you might be getting more of in the coming future. Is that fair to say here?
If you'd like to hear them, we'd like to make them.
Right.
But
because they're super fun and super easy. Here we go.
So for this installment of Sonnet Exploder, we will be hitting sonnet number 23 as an unperfect actor on the stage. Before we get started, it probably makes the most sense for us to read it to you.
Yeah.
So I guess it's my turn.
Yeah,
so
you're up.
Here we go. As an unperfect actor on the stage who with his fear is put besides his part, or some fierce thing replete with too much rage, whose strength's abundance weakens his own heart, so I, for fear of trust, forget to say the perfect ceremony of love's rite, and in mine own love's strength seem to decay, or charged with burden of mine own love's might. Oh, let my books be then the eloquence and dumb presagers of my speaking breast, who plead for love and look for recompense more than that tongue that more hath more expressed. Oh, learn to read what silent love hath writ, to hear with eyes belongs to love's fine wit.
Mm.
Woo!
Yeah!
That was sonnet 23.
Sonnet 23. So before we launch into the line-by-line breakdown, when we're thinking about sonnets and talking about sonnets, there is a man who jumps to mind that we called in a favor on, which is one of the world's leading sonneteers who has memorized all 154 sonnets and is awesome at parties because you can be like, hey, Will, and drop like three words, and he's like, "Oh, that's sonnet number that's 23." Or like, "Hey, Will, what's number 61?" He's like, "Bub, bub, bub." And it's like, "That's pretty cool." He also fits in with us here at No Holds Barred because if you look at his website, iloveshakespeare.com, he is described by the press as, quote, "a remarkably dashing scoundrel, by turns oafish, appealing, cowardly, cynically brutal, and guilefully manipulative," which makes him a natural fit for your boys here at No Holds Barred. So let's turn over to Mr. Will Sutton of iloveshakespeare.com for some quick thoughts, and probably the most informed thoughts on this podcast about sonnet number 23.
So, I've got 1 minute to explain sonnet number 23. Basically, the first thing you have to check is it a straight-out sonnet? So, on the page, it should look like four lines, gap, four lines, gap, four lines, gap, couplet. Is that the case? No. As usual, it's Shakespeare faffing with the form, and he's got 12 lines and a final couplet. Two thoughts. That's what it is. And yet, those first 12 lines, my God. The other thing we need to look at is where it is in the series. We're number 23. So we've just had the 1 to 17 of the fair young man being promised immortality if he would have some babies, because that's what he's telling him to do in the first 17 sonnets. Then he changes his tack and he says, like, no, I will immortalize you. And that's what he does. He immortalizes him. I always go for the sound. Above everything else. Because what are you doing? You're lifting inky blots off a page through your mind and heart and body and mouth. And you're throwing them out there. The final couplet. Or learn to read what silent love hath writ. To hear with eyes belongs to love's fine wit. That little conundrum of, what do you mean? read what silent love hath writ? Writ where? Is it written in the face? Or is it the actual poem that I'm looking at right now on the page? Somebody, originally, scratched it out with a feather. Sharpen it, and then go dippity-dippity-dip into your inkwell, and then scratchity-scratchity-scratch. And that's like 3 syllables, 4.5. So you got time to think when you're making one of these. He must have had time to think, but he must have also been inspired when that quill would not have gone fast enough for his mind. It's a sonnet about writing. It's a sonnet about acting. And it's a sonnet about interpreting both acting and writing. That's all I've got to say. Thanks. William Sutton from Amsterdam.
Thank you for that, Will. And with that, we will dig in on taking this line by line.
It's interesting to note, looking at the whole structure of the sonnet, that it's basically two universes of thought followed by a couplet, as opposed to sometimes you get the three. Mm-hmm. You know, this, you get a strong stop, a full period at the end of line 8,
uh-huh,
and then at the end of line 12, and then, of course, the couplet at mm-hmm. the end, which is neat in terms of breaking up the thoughts into the universes of thought.
Yeah.
So should we dig in the beginning?
Yeah, let's go.
Cool.
So line number 1, as an unperfect actor on the stage.
Yes. Love that it is already a theatrical poem.
Uh-huh.
I like the allusion to actors and stages right up front. This is a poet who is also working in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of neat as an early sonnet.
Yeah.
And these early sonnet meaning early in the 154.
Right.
In the first
right
chunk.
The word unperfect at first, you know, at first blush is like a failed attempt to create a new version of imperfect, but actually is a reference to an actor who is it doesn't have his lines memorized.
Right.
You know,
take pains, be perfect.
Be perfect.
I mean,
in Midsummer Night's Dream, when Quince gives his directions to the actors, be perfect is learn your lines.
Bottom does that.
Correct. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Well, Quince thought it,
and then Bottom just is a said consummate
first,
ass.
Right. He is a consummate ass.
He is an ass. That's right.
He is an ass. Let it be written down. He is an ass. So as an unperfect actor on the stage, but that could also mean possibly, as we're about to get into all of his shortcomings that he's going to acknowledge, it may also mean he's just a man.
Right.
You know, he is fallible.
Yes.
So there are two things to play there.
Right. And there's a sense of this other character being not really talked about.
Uh-huh.
I feel like in this sonnet, the poet is writing to somebody, but there's an implied other person.
Uh-huh.
Who is probably a perfect actor.
Right.
Like, or that sense of like...
It's a triangle situation.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that there's this other person who just knows everything. Like, they say the perfect thing. When you're there, like, they just have all the thoughts. And they can voice their thoughts.
Right.
And I am not that.
Right.
When I get in your company, I forget what I wanted to say.
Who with his fear is put besides his part, the second line of this sonnet. That's exactly what you were saying right there. Who gets choked up and being put besides his part being the lines that he's given.
Yeah.
And so be besides his part is forgetting his lines going up.
Yeah.
So literally getting so nervous that you are tongue-tied.
Just blank.
Yeah.
Can I not say I thank you? It's an Orlando line in As You Like It. But it's the same sort of thing of like, also sticking on that first line for just a second, the scansion possibilities, if you start off Pyrrhic and then Sponde it, that you get, this sonnet starts with an irregular heartbeat as an unperfect actor versus as an unperfect actor.
Uh-huh.
I feel like it's nice that it starts with these two little words.
Uh-huh.
And then the following bigger word is unperfect.
Right.
Like there's something poetically ironic about it.
Yeah.
It's sort of beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful.
That it's an intentional stumble out of the blocks.
It's right. Like, it's like, well, I
already screwed it up.
The first foot, messed that one up. Like, it's kind of, it's, you know, it's lovely.
Yeah,
in that
can
way.
I take it again? Nope, we're already out. It's already there.
Nope.
I can't blot a line.
We're rhyming already now.
Yeah, we're off. Yeah. The other thing about this line, who with his fear, with meaning by, so by his fear. So the fear is what's causing
this. I see.
Line three, or some fierce thing replete with too much rage, who with his fear is put besides his part, or some fierce thing replete with too much rage.
Replete meaning?
Means overindulged, excessive, like overflowing.
Got it.
Some fierce thing overflowing with too much rage. The other thing to note here is that thing is a loaded word here.
Certainly is. Loaded, why?
Meaning it could refer to the sexual organ, either for men or women.
I see.
But in this instance, some fierce thing replete with too much rage seems to indicate a more...
coming on disposition?
Yes. Let's go with that and not bleep it. There's also, when you look at this in the context of the full slate of sonnets,
yes,
I believe this is 23, I believe there is reference to thing in sonnet 20 as well. So this is on the mind.
Right. He's got that sort of vigorous, young, you know, I've got so much rage here on my thing. I can't make it. I can't even get through line three without thinking about it.
Right. So in sonnet 20, the third lines 8 to 12, and for a woman wert thou first created, till nature as she wrought thee fell a doting, and by addition me of thee defeated by adding one thing to my purpose nothing. Nothing, purpose, of course, nothing. As we discover in Much Ado About Nothing, also means the female sexual organ.
Right.
And he's adding his one thing, a bada bing, bada boom.
Realist guy in the room, how you doing?
Things they don't teach you in middle school.
You can't teach that in middle school.
Legally.
Legally. There's also the nice opposing image of the unperfect actor with the sage with his fear is put besides his part. The sense of, like, almost like tremoring, like scared.
Yeah. Timid.
And it's like, or, you know, the counterpoint, or something that's just complete, like a bull.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, I gotta get out of here.
Right. Just like redlining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it is like, it swings both ways. The pendulum of this poet's
emotion
is out of control.
Right. Then going on to the fourth line here, whose strength's abundance weakens his own heart.
Mm-hmm.
Or some fierce thing replete with too much rage, whose strength's abundance weakens his own heart.
Yeah, I love the antithesis of strength and weaken.
Mm-hmm.
That you have, you know, there is that sense of, I have so much strength that it actually weakens me.
Right.
Or like the heart, it's like the a heart bursting.
Right,
if you have too much blood pumping. That's a heart attack.
Yeah, like, right. You're over. You know, when it's like you see it, it happens in movies all the time, where it's like the old person is like gets really excited at the wedding and then passes. It's like, give him some air, spread out. It's like, well, you're overcharged, right?
Right.
Strength's abundance weakens his own heart. You're wearing yourself out. You know. Or like if someone's taking a little blue pill for their fierce thing and it overcharges their own heart. The other note here is that heart here can be, there is an indication in Taming of the Shrew where I believe it's Bianca and Hortensio have a scene where they're talking about heart and art, that he is a master of his art. And she says, you are a master of your art. And he says, and you are a master of my heart.
Nice.
So that reference here could be whose strength's abundance weakens his own art as well as heart.
Oh, interesting.
That he's so obsessed with this target of his affection that he can't write.
His work is suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
His muse.
Right.
His muse hath abandoned him.
And it has been weakened. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice here looking at some of the consonant sounds. Got a lot of N's, NGs, in this whole first quatrain.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of, you know, the unperfect actor, from fierce thing, replete with too much rage, whose strength's abundance weakens this his own heart. All that, those ends, those really romantic sort of sustainable consonants, but also just like you can feel that there's that sound and then sound, which is lovely and so
and playable
and so playable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in addition to the sound file Will sent over, he did send over a wonderfully cryptic looking image of notes that he scribbled. That was like, what is this? Like a massive puzzle to figure
out.
It's
perfect.
It was so fun. But he does note that the W sound throughout the course of the sonnet will start to disappear. And we get a lot of them here in the beginning. Who, with, whose, weaken, whoa.
Right.
In addition to those ends.
Yeah.
Kind of a nice, playful wooden.
Yeah, keeping an eye. And that's something to keep an eye out as we move through. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Line 5 as we start our second quatrain. So I, for fear of trust, forget to say.
This line is one of the ones that was really tricky when looking at this. I was walking around today reading and going, okay, so who is the trust?
Uh-huh.
Does he not trust himself?
Well, sure.
Does he not trust the target of his affection?
Uh-huh.
Or does he not trust this mysterious third person that may or may not exist in the sonnet?
Could be. I mean, I think I read that as trust as being given a position of response. He's given this position of responsibility, either as the writer, as the actor, as ideally the object of return affection from this person that he's speaking to. But the burden of it being on him in this situation is going back to before. That's causing his heart to overflow, you know, with this burden of, oh God, I have all this responsibility. This is squarely on me. That's right. My fear of trust.
Oh, interesting. Is it also possible that not trusting words themselves?
Sure.
As a poet who's like, I don't have the words to say to you because I don't know if I can trust them. I know how I feel.
Right.
And whenever I say what I think I feel, it doesn't quite seem right.
Right. Especially since he's going to come back around to that in a second where he talks about there's the difference between what one says and what one writes and what one reads and what one feels.
Right.
That could be the trust that, oh boy, I'm really worried this isn't going to come out the way I want it to. You know?
Right.
I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yep.
As you can tell.
Yep.
Wish me luck. Here we go.
Here we go. I love it.
Line number 6. The perfect ceremony of love's rite.
Interesting scansion. Just this is a tongue twister. The perfect ceremony of love's rite. The perfect ceremony of love's rite.
I would go Pyrrhic Sponde in the 4th and 5th feet of this one. So it's the perfect ceremony of love's rite, and you hit love's rite as the two most important words in this line. Although there's something to be said that the perfect here ties right back to the unperfect that we kick things off on. So that echo that needs to be reverberating in this reading here.
Right. That's definitely a thing to key into. And that falls naturally, the perfect ceremony of love's rite. It's interesting, the play on rite, going back to what we were just talking about, like, it's a writer, so you have these ceremonious rites. I think the immediate lowest hanging fruit that jumps to mind for the perfect ceremony of love's rite is marriage.
Sure. The two notes on right specifically is that it appears as right, R-I-T-E, in the folio, I believe, and right, R-I-G-H-T, in the quarto.
Yeah.
So at the time, those were interchangeable, generally. But thinking about it as love's right, R-I-T-E, as a ritual.
Yes.
And love's right, R-I-G-H-T, as love's due.
I see.
As what the something obligation is, of love, yeah. not obligation, but you know what you are in, what you
entitled?
Can have, yeah. you know, or what you have the right to, literally, what you are have access to,
right?
You know, and this is something that in All's Well That Ends Well, there's a reference where Parola says that they have the right of love, meaning sexual intercourse. So that's love's right as well. The perfect ceremony of love's right sounds like a wedding,
yeah,
but it could also mean
getting that scrump
adult
on.
Time. Getting that scrump on, which was in the bad quarto
of course.
The sonnets.
Of course. yeah, there is... I think that gets back to that idea that this is some kind of forbidden love.
Sure.
That it's like, I forget to say the thing that if it's love's right, R-I-G-H-T, like, I'm not allowed to say the things I would like to say right now.
Uh-huh. Do you think it's forbidden or it's just he's getting ahead of himself?
I think it could be either. I think there's that sense that it may be something that he can't have.
Okay.
Either because of who he is, where, I mean, you know, speculation of who these are about.
Uh-huh.
That's a subject for books and books and books.
Right.
But there is that sense, I feel like, of, man, I wish I could just say what I want to say.
Right.
But there are things that I'm not allowed to say because of other things.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, I don't have the ability to say what I want to.
Right. Because I don't have that love's right.
I don't have love's right.
At this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Line number 7. And in mine own love's strength seem to decay.
Yep. We have some antithesis on strength and decay. The sense of one thing, because I have so much strength, again, this gets back to that same sense of strength's abundance, uh-huh. weakening my own heart.
Uh-huh.
And in mine own love, strength seem to decay.
Uh-huh. And as it's going to tie in, we'll just do these both together in line 8. Or charged with burden of mine own love's might. So it's basically the exact same thing that he's saying in 3 and 4. Fierce thing replete with too much rage, whose strength's abundance weakens his own heart, to mine own love's strength seems to decay, or charged with burden of mine own love's might.
Yeah.
That he just has too much emotion and it's killing him.
Yeah.
You know, it's doing a number on him.
And I look like a wreck.
Right.
I look like a disaster.
Yeah.
Because I'm so in love.
Yeah.
And I can't say anything about it. And the burden of it, this idea of love is a burden, the heaviness, the uh-huh. weight, is really interesting.
Yeah.
There's that sense that, you know, you think about love makes you light as feathers, and the lover who can just like fly around, being like soaring in love. And it's
yeah.
like, no, this love is like killing me.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's...
Right.
It's loving the 2003 Boston Red Sox. Like, God.
It's like that Bill Withers song, Use Me Up, where he's like, if it feels so good being used, keep on using me until you use me up.
Yeah.
Which, you know, 375 years later hits the same thing. Like,
right.
This is amazing, but you're literally killing me.
Right. 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 Heavy matters.
And the structure matters. Here, you know, this is as an actor thing to look at what Shakespeare gives you in terms of mirroring structure. In these back-to-back lines, you have mine own love's strength and mine own love's might. Mm. And that's something you need to keep an eye on and play and decide how you're going to relate them. Because it's when it's like that, you can't ignore it.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of things you can do with it, but the one thing you can't do is just be like, weird.
Didn't care.
Guess he's not that good.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to get your... seem is an interesting verb.
Indeed it
isn't
is.
Isn't it?
It is.
That it's
it
not...
Is.
His own love strength isn't decaying.
It just
seems to decay.
Right. Seems is always an important word, I think, with Shakespeare. Hamlet brings... I mean, Hamlet shines a light on that when... If it be so, why seems it so with thee? Seems, uh-huh. madam, nay, it is. I know not seems.
Mm.
This whole sense of, no, the appearance of what something is and what it is are not the same thing.
Right, and Hamlet would know.
And he would know. Like, you know, like, there is that sense that this, no matter how heavy or burdenous this is, I might look like crap, and I might the appearance might be that I'm falling apart.
But yeah.
Inside, I'm just in love.
Yeah.
And like, it's all coming together.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing. It's just, it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's ponderous.
It's a lot.
I like it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm happy that it's here.
Yeah.
Because it's so strong. It is mighty in the truest sense of mighty.
Yeah.
Mightiest and the mighty.
Yeah. There's something cool looking at the first word in the first foot of the odd lines in the first eight here. Looking at 1, 3, 5, 7, just as, or, so, and. Like this, this is the first period here.
At the end of line 8.
Mine own loves might. That this whole thing is still that we stumble out of the block and we don't catch our footing.
Right.
Yet.
Right.
So
still
maybe
stumbling.
Maybe now. But it's still going. It's not like a quick little whoop and we're good.
Right.
These all have momentum. All those little words in the beginning of each odd line seem to me to
accelerate.
Yeah.
It's another stumble. It's just like always trying to catch your feet underneath you, but there's no time.
Yeah. And I picture like the cartoon character like rolling down the hill.
Right.
Like, whoa, whoa.
Yeah. It's Chaplin. Just a cloud. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, going into the third quatrain here.
Yes.
Oh, let my books be then the eloquence.
Yeah, good so thing. We have what David Richmond would call an orgasmic O. although I do think, you know, the mindset of those O's are just there to be filled with emotion.
Right.
And then a strong verb, let.
Mm.
Let my books be then the eloquence.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I think let's an interesting verb. Because that's a verb. He's imploring.
It's a plea.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, this is as active as I can get is that you will allow something.
Yeah.
Which is, again gets back to that, I think, that forbidden love thing.
Well, it's also like he starts this, and just to as a point of order, books here doesn't mean like there's a secret stash of novellas that he wrote that we lost.
Right.
Books can mean any piece of writing. There are some, I think it's in Cymbeline, books refers to literally a letter, like a two-page letter counts as a book. So it's any source of writing. It also probably more directly in this sonnet, as we're talking about an actor on the stage, is the prompt book.
Oh, sure.
That he would have, you know, that he would have written for that unperfect actor who can't remember his goddamn lines.
Right.
So,
also, the sonnets were published episodically,
mm-hmm.
and then would have been published in little books.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have all of the Shakespeare sonnets combined and put in an order for us.
Right.
But when they were coming out, they would have been coming out episodically,
I believe.
I believe.
Well, they were sent around to his friends for a while, I think for the first 50 or so.
Sweet.
That there were rumors that if you were boys with Shakespeare, you could get access, like at his salons, he would read you his sonnets.
That's
it was
cool.
Like a big deal, like on the deep web of 1590s England. And then they started getting published because somebody figured out they could make some money. So
smart.
The more things change. But the the books here, I feel like this is him being like, he's up on stage, you know, the writer kid in the high school theater class who really just wants to be writing and is really uncomfortable being up in front of everyone.
Yeah.
He's like, can I just write another paper? Do I really need to do this?
Right.
I don't want to say it. Let me write it.
Right.
Let me, because that's, I feel like that's going to, no, can I, no, I suppose if I'm first. I suppose if we're going to be in love, I will have to talk to you at some point. But it's like that one, you know, a line 9 Hail Mary, like, please help.
Right.
Please
give. Let the papers be the,
exactly.
the real beauty.
Right.
And the eloquence.
Right.
What a great word.
Mm.
Let my books be then the eloquence.
And yeah, it's interesting that this is when he seems the most comfortable, right?
Yeah.
He's just stumbling all over himself about how he has too much emotion and not enough emotion, and he's repeating himself, and he's talking about all this horny boy stuff.
Yeah.
Then he's like, my books are very eloquent.
Yeah. And let that be the,
please.
Let that be the thing.
Yeah. I'll stop talking about my manhood if you let me just write it down and proof it and send it in.
And dumb presagers of my speaking breast.
Mm-hmm.
Dumb and speaking, antithetical.
Mm-hmm. Dumb meaning silent.
Yes.
Not stupid.
Right.
Like a dumb waiter.
What do you call me?
Oh, God. That's a dumb joke.
Yeah, the dumb presagers, the words, the sentences, the books of the speaking breast. Breast, the heart.
Right.
That my heart is speaking.
Right.
Through words through that are written.
Right.
And that I can speak to you with a pencil.
Right.
But not with my mouth.
Right.
Because when I try to speak to you with my mouth, this is what happens.
This is what happens. These past 10 lines are what happens. Right. Presagers is an interesting word here because this only appears elsewhere in Shakespeare's works as like an indication of premonition, of seeing the future, which this can kind of mean, but it adds another layer that it's almost like I wrote you that letter. Did you read that? You didn't. That would have been real helpful.
Right.
If you had picked that up. Okay, right. Cool. Like, as he has written enough about this, and now he's on the spot having to talk about it.
Yeah.
But his words, his written words, laid the groundwork for what his heart is now forcing out of his throat, whether he wants it or not.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Line 11, who plead for love and look for recompense.
Yes. This is one of the few, only two lines in the sonnet that are broken up in the sonnet. Broken up in the line. Rather.
Broken up how so?
With a pause or with a change of thought indicated by punctuation.
Okay.
Who plead for love, comma, and look for recompense. That there are two thoughts in here.
Uh-huh.
That the first thought, continuing, let my books be then the eloquence and dumb presagers of my speaking breast, who plead for love. That's their action.
Right.
And they expect something in return.
Right.
They look for the recompense.
The recompense being the return, the repayment, the agreement to be loved back.
I don't want to just tell you all these things and have you read them and go like, that's nice.
Right.
I would like you to love me back. That would be really great.
Please.
So... who plead for love, that gets back to that gets us back to the verb from two lines prior.
Yeah.
And look for recompense, which is a nice, we're going to start to the imagery of the different senses,
uh-huh.
right, where we have feeling, we have hearing, we have seeing now,
uh-huh.
that they're looking for recompense.
Right.
Even though they can't speak. Somehow these words, these books are now being personified.
Yeah.
And are they can see.
Mm.
And that'll be important coming up in the couplet.
Teasers. Line number 12. More than that tongue that more hath more expressed. It's a mouthful.
It's a mouthful and it slows you down on purpose.
Mm.
I think that this is, again, with the tongue twisted poet who can't get through a thought.
Right.
This line is tough.
Yeah, especially at 12 when you're coming down the home stretch.
Right. It's like that line from Lear. Which of you shall we say doth love us most? There is that. This is the implied, I think, other person, where it's like someone has said, I love you. Like, I'm the poet. I've told you I love you.
Yeah.
But this third person has said, well, I love you more.
Mm.
And it's like the competitive quantifying of love.
Right.
Here is looking. I'm looking for recompense more than that tongue that more hath more expressed.
Uh-huh.
The word more being in one line three times is certainly no coincidence.
Right. It's almost like if you were going to give a note to an actor, it's like you just said, someone else, you said, I love you. Someone else said, I love you more. And that word more is just like killing you, is just like echoing more, more, more. What does more mean? How can you love someone more
right.
than more than the tongue that more hath more? Like that's what you've been, that's what's been eating you up if you're going down this competitive path.
Yeah. It's thinking about the one and hearing them say to the person that they're with, I love you. And that person saying, I love you more. And you're just like, what? But I love you the most. Not that I'm into quantifying love, but I love you the most.
I actually want to, so I want to look at each of these mores. Can you help me figure out what each one means?
Sure.
More than that. So we're talking about the book still from four lines ago. Who plead for love and look for recompense. More, the books plead for it more than that tongue.
I think the books look for recompense more than that tongue.
So the right, so he cares more about the response to the writing than what he's saying?
Then yeah, like I need you to I understand if what I say to you is garbage
that I am just running my mouth, that this is, I know, I get it.
But if you read the poem in the books, they really are looking for recompense more than the tongue.
That more
hath more expressed.
So what are those two? More expressed, meaning my words are more, the books are the eloquence.
Yeah.
They don't, I've said a lot of words here today as you've just been staring at me.
Right.
Like wide-eyed as I just tell you that I love you more than a house.
Right.
I realize now I'm just still talking to fill the awkward silence. Excellent. Okay, well, here's this. Here's 14 lines. I kind of boiled it down for you. But what is that previous more?
Previous, the second?
Yeah.
More than that tongue, that more hath more expressed. That more hath more expressed.
Is it like more often? More often has said more things?
No, I think it's the more things. More than that tongue, that more hath more expressed, that I've said 8 million things.
Yeah.
And I meant all of them, but like most million were not that eloquent.
Right. Really could have used an editor.
So I think if you could just focus in on these words, that'd be great. Right. Like, I've said more in the past, and I don't deny those things, but just let's focus on these 14 lines for right now.
Right.
I think that's the more.
I buy that. Line 13 as we head into the couplet here. Oh, learn to read what silent love hath writ.
Yes. Again, we have another strong O in the first foot, the first beat of the first foot, followed by a strong verb. Learn. Learn to read what silent love hath writ. I'm going to stop talking now.
Yeah.
And from this point forward, I need you to read what I write.
What silent love, after all of these, that tongue that more hath more expressed, but silent love is what's my only chance here, based on the response that I'm getting to the words that are coming out of my mouth. Why don't you read my poem?
I may stop calling you 20 times a day.
Right.
I will not be sending you text messages anymore. I will just be writing great books. There's also an implication here that we're going to be speaking a new language. I'm going to try to speak a new language here. The silent love. So, yeah, I'm going to stop with the incessant phone calling.
Right.
And the showing up.
Right.
And the speaking and the standing outside your door with a boombox over my head.
The full court press.
I'm just going to be writing poems to a nameless person.
Right.
And I need you to know that it's you.
Right.
I think.
That's pretty good. We also have read tying into writ. Learn, read, writ are all interesting here.
Oh, yeah.
And then going into the final line, to hear with eyes belongs to love's fine wit.
Yeah.
So we had reading what was writ, and now we're hearing with our eyes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a beautiful,
it's awesome
sentiment.
It is awesome. It's in the truest sense of the word awesome, that, you know, it's supernatural. It's of another world. And that's what love can do. Like, if to think about this in a human way, it doesn't make any sense. But that's not love.
Right.
Love can do that. Love can hear with eyes, and it can taste with a nose, and all of these things that are mind blowing. And that's what I need from you now. I need you to read these words and hear my voice.
Yeah.
As opposed to just, you know, that's what he's
doing. Yeah.
That's the plea.
For sure.
That's the plea for love.
To Hear With Eyes belongs to Love's fine wit. You know, the wit being the intelligence. To Hear With Eyes also ties into, you know, Love is Blind. It's not... this is kind of going against love being blind. This is love is actually more perceptive when you can look at it through... through a writing, through analysis, you know, not like...
Sure. Is that why love is blind? Because it can hear with its eyes as opposed to seeing with its
maybe.
Eyes?
Maybe. That's an interesting take. And that belongs to love's fine wit. The fine wit, again, being what he... The eloquence in his books tying together. His fine wit is not in his tongue. There's no fine wit there.
Right. Yeah. Belongs is really interesting, getting us back to love's right.
Uh-huh.
If it's love's right, R-I-G-H-T, there's that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Also, mine, my, and then belonging. There's an interesting, like, kind of possessiveness here.
Yeah, there's a possessiveness. Yeah. That could kind of take an odd turn depending on what the recipient's reaction to the whole thing is.
Right.
Could be in full horror movie mode here, or it's very, or it's very romantic,
or it's one of the two.
It's a real
depends what you're into, I
high
guess.
Risk. and what you were saying about the W's,
yeah.
After taking a little break, they come back with a vengeance here in these last two lines.
Yeah,
what writ with wit?
Right, it's pretty strong. Mm. Four twentieths, one fifth of the. Syllables begin with W. That's pretty cool.
And that's a fact.
That is a fact. That checks out. That math checks out.
All right. I think that's what we got.
That's pretty good.
You want to give it a whirl for the kids at home?
Sure. As an unperfect actor on the stage who with his fear is put besides his part, or some fierce thing replete with too much rage whose strength's abundance weakens his own heart. So I, for fear of trust, forget to say the perfect ceremony of love's rite, and in mine own love's strength seem to decay, or charged with burden of mine own love's might. Let my books be then the eloquence and dumb presagers of my speaking breast, who plead for love and look for recompense, more than that tongue that more hath more expressed. Ah! Learn to read what silent love hath writ. To hear with eyes belongs to love's fine wit.
Well, there you go. That is sonnet number 23. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can find us on the web at noholdsbarred.com. You can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. You can tweet us at noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/NoHoldsBarredcast. So until next time, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bollier.
Two sonnets down. 152 to go.
Adieu, adieu, adieu. Adieu, 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 adieu.